This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Nua Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. Now, like every other day of the work week, we've got the breakfast grill at 8 a.m. today. Noel, why don't you tell us what is happening in half an hour?
So this company, Green Packet, they've been around for some time. They are making strides in the fintech and e-wallet space through its payment gateway service, Keeple Pay, over the past year. So our colleague, Lynn Mark, she will discuss with the founder of Green Packet, CC Puan, who retook the reins of the company in July 2019. And, you know, CC is quite an amazing entrepreneur. He grew up in a small rural town, in a village with no proper running water and electricity. And the only child to go to university, and that was really through a lot of grit and hard work.
Definitely another entrepreneur story we want to listen to, and that's happening in half an hour. Now, we're going into some international news. Saudi Arabia's vision, 2030, is its ambitious plan to reform its economy and diversify away from its dependence on oil revenues. I think this has been a big thing for the kingdom. Now, the first round of goals, like reducing unemployment and creating more private sector jobs, were supposed to be met by this year.
But obviously, you know, the pandemic has destroyed many people's, many countries' plans. But Saudi, definitely a lot of things to go, right? I think, you know, some lofty targets, they have 50% of women, for example, comprise 50% of university graduates. But only 20% of the workforce are women. So not just women, also SMEs is something they are working on.
Yeah, so the kingdom has already announced some measures to boost the economy, like tripling its value-added tax from 5% to 15%, cutting the cost of living allowance for civil servants, and also announced a $32 billion rescue package for businesses earlier in March. Now, for some insights on this and more, we speak to James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. James, are you there on the line with us?
Absolutely. Good morning.
Good morning to you as well. Now, let's talk about this. What does this mean for Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's vision, 2030 plans to reinvigorate and modernize the economy? Will it be completely shelved, revised, or revisited later?
Well, Saudi Arabia, without question, even more than before, has to diversify its economy and has to introduce economic reforms, streamlining of the economy. Vision 2030 was designed to do that, at least in the mind of Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The problem was that implementation of that plan over the last years was already flawed in terms of creating jobs, in terms of developing a strong and independent private sector, and also to some degree in terms of diversification, despite the fact that we've seen the emergence of an entertainment industry, for example. Prince Mohammed, basically, his credibility rides on the ability to create jobs. And that has been severely affected by the combination of multiple crises, the health crisis, the economic turndown, and, of course, the collapse of oil prices.
Well, with the collapse of oil prices, and I know part of the plan is to promote renewable energy sector. So how's that going to affect their plan then?
Well, renewable energy makes perfect sense for Saudi Arabia. Certainly solar. I mean, this is a country, a desert country, that has high temperatures. And Saudi Arabia, obviously oil, first of all, was a declining asset. With other words, that if you look forward over the next couple of decades, oil was probably going to diminish in value because of the rise of natural gas as well as renewables. So that it would make perfect sense for Saudi Arabia, in a sense, to make the leap and jump over the phase of gas and move straight into renewables. It's had some problems in doing that, but the fundamental problem that Saudi Arabia has is that it is almost wholly dependent on oil exports. Its budget is based on a fairly high oil price. It's not going to be achieved anytime soon, and therefore it has a fiscal problem. Now, the question is whether it is capable of doing the right thing in terms of addressing those kind of issues. So, for example, to give you an example, Saudi Arabia, like other oil-producing states, has a significant sovereign wealth fund. It's drawn down already some $27 billion on that fund. But nonetheless, that fund, like other sovereign wealth funds in the past, has been focused on buying assets overseas. It was a portfolio investor, and the idea was that those investments would gain in value, and therefore the reserves would go up. So the question now is whether that, and if you look at Saudi Arabia and the Public Investment Fund, the PIF, they have in recent weeks, maybe a month or two, invested in a number of companies, basically buying either distressed assets or assets that had lost significantly in value, in the assumption that they would make a financial gain over time. But the question is whether a fund like that should still be doing it, or whether it should be focused on development domestically. For example, sovereign wealth funds could help stimulate local industry. They have the skills in terms of digitalizing the economy. They have the skills in terms of developing financial markets, things like mezzanine finance. And we don't see that happening yet.
Yeah, James, do you think the developments of the last few months would have diminished MBS's position of power in the country?
He has, until now, a very strong grip on the various levers of power in Saudi Arabia. And he's done so, obviously, by repressing anybody who is critical of him, and by these waves of arrests, including arrests of members of the ruling family. But he does have to produce. And obviously, in a situation like this, where it's going to be more difficult to produce, there are going to be more voices calling for change. Now, one of the fundamental things that you've seen happen this week is that in many ways, the social contract was almost fundamentally broken. You mentioned the increase in value-added tax. Maybe more important or equally important is the fact that cost of living allowances for government employees, who constitute at least 70% of the Saudi national workforce, have been suspended. So now you have a situation in which there are cutbacks and increases that the ordinary Saudi is going to feel. But we haven't seen anything equivalent in terms of, for example, the allowances that the ruling family or members of the ruling family get, or in the expenses that would relate to the ruling family. So the question is, over time, whether that's going to be something that is quietly accepted, or whether that's going to cause discontent. Keep in mind that Saudi Arabia is a country, if you go back to 2011, for example, when the popular Arab revolts took place, Saudi Arabia's response domestically was to hand out $130 billion to government employees in benefits, bonuses, step up public housing, all kinds of things like this that were designed to keep Saudis happy, as opposed to much of the rest of the Arab world. That's now something where you're seeing the opposite happen.
James, we've got about a minute now. What do you think, how do you think this puts Saudi's power in the region? Does this do anything there?
I think in some ways this has leveled the playing field with Iran. With other words, Saudi Arabia has diminished financial muscle, won't be able to splash money around as it did in the past. We also saw the Umrah, the small Hajj, canceled this year, and potentially we're going to see the Hajj itself canceled this year. So with other words, its religious influence and ability to project religiously has been diminished. So generally, overall, yes, its power, its position in the Middle East, but also beyond that, the G20, for example, that it chairs this year, has been compromised.
And that was James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the Ezra Durantham School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute, speaking to us earlier this morning and really bringing up some of the big points when it comes to Saudi Arabia there, particularly that two things that stood out, I guess, or three, was one, the fund, their fund not being able to, or watching out what they should invest in, two, the moral, the social contract with the civil servants, and three, I guess, the oil reliance. And that is something that Malaysia should pay attention to. Although we're not as reliant on oil, it's a parallel.
Well, something that we haven't really discussed today is basically Aramco's continuation of its dividend policy. When they came public last year, they promised to pay $75 billion in dividends every single year. And even with oil prices being in the dungeons where they are, they've continued to underwrite that $18.75 billion first quarter dividend, which amongst all listed companies anywhere in the world is the highest. And, you know, Saudi Arabia can't afford it at this point in time with oil prices where it is. I mean, their forex reserves at just shy of $500 billion has been hit considerably. I think at one point in time, about a year, 2 years ago, it was something like $700 billion. But now it's been diminished to a point where they've had a triple VAT. And to basically roll back on assistance to its own people, which is quite unprecedented. Something that people are saying might even damage MBS's position in government.
Yes, politically as well, right? I guess the oil curse always looms over any oil-rich countries, right? Yeah. So Malaysia, some lessons, of course. Malaysia is continuing to diversify our economic base, also moving up the value chain. But I think in Saudi Arabia, there are a lot of structural issues here, right? Women, for example, they account for 50% of university graduates, but only I think something like below 20% in the workforce are women. And also SME contribution, they only contribute something like under 30%. So there's so much dependence on oil, the oil big majors in Saudi.
Right. And now on that note, we're going into a few messages. Up next, we'll be discussing the political developments in Kedah and what this means for party alliances in Malaysia. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.